Welcome to A World of Good Podcast. My name is Andrew Gale. This is a unique recording. We are here at the Church of God Convention in Denver, getting to share in front of a live group of people who you may or may not hear in the background, but are here to hear some stories about some neat things that are happening around the world, specifically focusing on Europe and the Middle East and Latin America. And one of the most important things, we have a special guest host with us, Jenny Miso. Welcome, Jenny. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
Jenny, can you share a little about yourself, your family, where you guys are right now in ministry, just for those who may not know you?
Sure. I'm married to Bobby. We'll actually celebrate our 15th wedding anniversary next week. And we have a son, Moore, who's 12, and a daughter, Reese, who's 8. And we've been serving in Cote d'Ivoire, West Africa, since 2015. So we're just over a little more than 10 years there now. And we've been working with EBAL, the West Africa Bible Institute there, as well as launching and training leaders for the Children of Promise program. And also, we host work groups or service experiences that come into Cote d'Ivoire, as well as supporting the national leadership. In January of this year, 2025, though, we accepted a new role as the Associate Regional Coordinators for Africa. So we're working on handing over some more of the local leadership to our capable leaders there in Cote d'Ivoire as we look at the region in a wider way.
So I just realized something as you were talking, and this is exactly why you don't want to do a podcast with me, and you'll never do it again, I'm sure, because I think of things that we have not written down that I'm going to share. But I was just realizing that in 2026, it will be 20 years since we started seminary together.
Yes, I think that's
right. Isn't that scary to think?
Yes.
So I've known Jenny for almost 20 years. We went to seminary together. We both started in the same kind of cohort. The next year, Abby, well, she was Smith then, now Torgerson, came and joined us as well. So that's crazy to think, 20 years.
Yep.
Well, this is not your first time on the podcast either. We had you and your husband, Bobby, back as guests in 2020, and then a fantastic episode. If you want to listen to it, I mean, yours was good too, but your son, Moore, he was a guest in 2022. We somehow missed 2024. I didn't realize we were doing every 2 year things, but we got back on track now in 2025. So really grateful that you're here with us. So today on the podcast, we're going to be talking about projects that we as Global Strategy participate in as an organization around the world, kind of why we do them, how they work, and just share some examples and stories of that. So first, I think it's important for people to understand what we mean when we say project. So for us, a project can be anything that a local church feels called to do that they want help in resourcing. And resourcing can mean funding, it can mean expertise, all kinds of things. So you know, some of our projects, we support projects that are hospitals, primary and secondary education, seminaries, leadership development, entrepreneur institutions, wells for safe drinking water. I mean, it really runs the gamut in the kinds of projects that we do, because our goal is really to support the local church. So what they feel like they need to do to love and care for their community, we want to help figure out how to make that happen. And we even say that our purpose as an organization is to walk alongside the local church globally. And so we want to assist them in helping to make happen what they really feel like is the way they can support their community. Now, Jenny, you, like you said, you're serving in Cote d'Ivoire, and you guys have some projects there. So how have you engaged in projects while serving in Cote d'Ivoire?
Yeah, Bobby and I have engaged with the EBAL project, which is the West Africa Bible Institute, and more recently with a project that's called the Yamoussoukro Events Place. And so we call that affectionately YEP, Y-E-P for Yamoussoukro Events Place, so YEP. And that is a really exciting one because it's an income-generating project that brings revenue through rentals for both on-site and off-site events. And the rentals include a three-wheeler to transport goods for events, which is already running and bringing income as of February of this year. So that's really exciting, as well as renting out tents for events. And the current phase of the project is the building of an open-air pavilion for on-site events that was actually designed by a land surveyor within one of our local churches there in Cote d'Ivoire. The center will serve both those in the church and those in the larger community through affordable rentals for events. And the cool thing is that 50% of the income goes back into the project to make itself sustainable and to work with management. And the other 50% goes to national ministries like Christian education, theological education by extension, and youth ministry.
You started to already touch on some of the things that we really feel like are important values for the kinds of projects that we connect checked in with. So projects that we engage in, there are kind of four key values that we're looking for. And I want to share what those are just so that as you hear the stories of these projects, you have an image for kind of what kinds of things we feel like can be really beneficial on the ground. So first, the first value that we have is empowerment. You know, we are committed to community empowerment, working with and through the local church, their leaders, because we really believe that they understand the complexity of their worlds much better than we do. So what this means is that projects start and end with the local church. That's the way that we see the work that we do. We recognize that the communities we engage with, they know their communities better, and we believe that they also have solutions to meet those needs. So part of what we want to do is help bring alongside the expertise we have to support the work that they feel called to do. So we get to come alongside in dialogue and partnership to help communities achieve their goals. Jenny, what's our second value?
The second value is creativity. Finding holistic solutions to global issues requires creativity, which is why we're committed to exploring different innovative approaches to welcoming the kingdom of God. And what this means is not everything works the first time. So we wish we could say that we have success every time, we're always learning. We're always learning. And so sometimes our plans work and sometimes we start again with a better grasp from the experience, and that allows us to be creative.
The third value for us is sustainability. The long-term solutions must begin and end with some kind of intentional sustainability as a primary goal. And so what that means is we recognize that we're not always going to be there to support a community. And so if a community is fully supported by outside funding, then when and if governments change or other things change that make it impossible for us to support that community, then that work stops as well. We don't feel like that's a good use of kingdom dollars to engage in that way. So what we want to do is help every project think through the way that it becomes sustainable. Now, as you know, every country is different. So what sustainability looks like is going to be different in every context. When you're in a military coup in Myanmar, it's a lot harder to talk about sustainability than in some other places. And so it's always different, but that's an intentional goal for us. It's a value, is to figure out what it looks like to do sustainability in each unique situation where we are.
And the last value is accountability. We believe cultivating healthy partnerships cross-culturally means educating all those involved, both the giver and the recipient, on how to approach equitable accountability that will support interdependent partnership. So this means we'll understand the context before we place expectations on the specifics of accountability. So we're committed to monitoring, evaluating, and reflecting on each of the projects that we're engaged in, but in ways that are culturally appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, as I'm sure many of you know, because I see a number of faces of work cross-culturally, what accountability looks like in every culture is very, very different. And when we have donors in the U.S. who have expectations of what accountability is, we have to help our folks on the ground understand how we figure out how to make those things work. Jenny, one of the ways that we're able to do such, I think, great work on the ground, engage with on the local level, really understand the local communities, because we have missionaries like you and your family that are helping to build those deep, deep relationships with our leaders. You are the cultural bridge for us to make these kinds of projects happen. And to me, that's one of the reasons that we will continue to have missionaries serving all over the world, helping to be that bridge for us. So first of all, thank you for all you do to serve the global church. But how have you seen these values, because you are on the ground level, how have you seen these values at play in projects that you've been a part of?
Well, I'll give YEP, the Yamoussoukro Events Place project in Cote d'Ivoire, as an example. It's a creative, income-generating project built on an asset that the church already has, which is the land that they own for the national headquarters of the church. And that this project empowers local church leaders to make decisions on how to develop their ministries because they have the ongoing funds to do so through a project like this. So accountability in our context comes in the form of the local project manager working with a committee that oversees the project. So they're working on it together.
I love that. Love that. That's so helpful. So these values really guide the work that we do. Every time we get a project, when we reach out to a national leader and say, hey, how can we support your community? And they come back with a project, we walk through these values and say, hey, here's the kind of work that we want to do that we feel like God's called us to. How can we partner with what you feel God's called you to? Where can we find a way to meet in the middle? And so these really do drive the work that we do. But I really feel like the best way to understand any of this is just to hear what it looks like in practice. So we've invited some guests to come and share from two different regions, Europe and the Middle East and Latin America, just to talk a little bit about a few of the projects that are happening in their region. There are lots more projects you can find. Again, if you go to chogglobal.org, our website, on the menu bar, you can scroll down and there's projects and you can see all the different projects in the different regions. But we want to hear about more in-depth about a couple projects that kind of mirror some of this. So first, let's welcome Nate Tatman. Nate used to be the co-host of A World of Good, and then the work that he's doing now in Europe and the Middle East is taking up a lot of time, and so he has given up on co-hosting with me.
Sorry.
Yeah, so now I have to recruit people like Ginny that have to come and sit through this excruciating experience. We're grateful that you're able to be here and share a little bit about what's happening in Europe and the Middle East. Can you first tell us where you're located and kind of what your role is?
Yeah, so I serve as a regional coordinator for Europe and the Middle East, along with my wife, Stacy. We are based out of Madrid, Spain, and we've been living there and serving now for 4 years.
That's awesome. So one of the projects the Global Strategy gets to connect in with in Europe and the Middle East that supports a number of countries is the Three Worlds Leadership Network. So can you tell us a little bit about this event, what it is, help us understand it, and maybe as you answer that, for those that don't have any idea what Three Worlds means, can you give us a quick overview of that as well?
Yeah. So first, the name, Three Worlds. We've kind of broken down Christianity, I guess, into three different contexts or worlds. The first one is a traditional world. In that context, the Christian language, the Christian culture, the Christian context is very familiar with people, especially many generations. Think of the Midwest or the Bible Belt, and by in large part, most of the population would consider themselves Christians or familiar with Christians. So that's the first world. The second world is a post-Christian world. And that one is more where living in a pluralistic society where as a Christian or as a believer, you're part of a minority group. The Christian language, the Christian culture, all of that is very foreign and sometimes can be kind of off-putting to people as well or threatening or not a welcoming context or environment. And many, majority of the population would be very skeptical of religion and the church, primarily because of past historical events that took place. And then the third context is a non-Western world. In this context, in this world, the culture is highly religious, highly spiritualized context. They take the Bible very literally. And the Bible speaks in very specific ways to their context and what's happening with them when the Bible talks about immigrants and refugees, when it talks about natural disasters and famine and wars, it quite literally speaks to what it is that they've experienced or are going through. And so breaking it down into these kinds of labels or languages, it helps us in a European context, especially because we have maybe an Afro-Caribbean church that's located in a very post-Christian secularized context. And so helping to identify those traditions, those cultures, those customs when they're trying to reach or be a part of that society, or a pastor who thinks more in a traditional mindset and is trying to reach a secularized culture. There's a lot of different nuances and a lot of different challenges and barriers that helps us through those conversations. So that's just a brief overview of the name. The 3WLN event, the Three Worlds Leadership Network, is the project has been going on now for 10 years. It started with actually seed money that was given to our team, our missionary team, to start the project from Change the World grant given by Church of God Ministries, I think about 10 years ago. And so we are about ready to host our sixth event this October out of the last 10 years. We have about 16 countries that are represented in this network. And usually I think we have about 50 participants from the region who attend this event.
So Nate, what makes this event so meaningful for those that attend?
Yeah, in our context, most of our countries, the Christian population makes up about 4% of the population, and that's on the high end. Most of the countries we serve in, Christianity makes up about 2% of that population. Wow. And so when you are one or two people, maybe three out of 100 who have the same mindset or same belief, same worldview as you do, it can be a very lonely, isolated, challenging lifestyle to live out as a Christian, as a believer. And so this network, which is also an event, is very, very important for people, especially if you're in a leadership position. Even fewer people have those peers, like-minded people that they can talk to, meet with when you're facing problems in your church or faith community and are wanting to process, to think through different things. It's very difficult to find others who come alongside with you and understand your context and your ministry environment. And so having this network and having this event fills a huge need and a huge gap for us.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine growing up in a place where I could go to church camps and conventions and be surrounded by so many people. I know I've heard stories from folks who have said that, you know, until they were in their teens or 20s and coming to an event like this, they'd never been around a Christian, like an evangelical Christian, that was not part of their family because their church was so small. And so that the idea of a place where you can gather with people from all around the region, that's a beautiful thing. Go ahead. You're going to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so the network, we have around 150 participants that have come through the network and belong in the network. And about 50 of them, about 50 will attend our event.
Gotcha.
And the event itself happens every 18 months. It offers encouragement, that connectivity, and then also training through speakers and breakout sessions and different things.
But the next question I was going to ask was connected to that network. You know, mm-hmm. So you have this event every 18 months, but the connections really continue outside of that. So what does that look like, and how has that strengthened the work of the church in the region?
Yeah, so again, this has been going on now for the last 10 years. We've seen a lot of the young leaders who have grown up in ministry, using air quotes there, have grown up in ministry, have moved from, you know, maybe part of a youth group or just as a young person in the church, and now they are overseeing maybe a youth ministry or children's ministry, or maybe they're the pastor of the church as well. And so they have, not just because of our team, but they have built connections and relationships with their peers. Oftentimes through this event, through these connections, they have, again, met each other for the first time. They have heard other people's stories that are similar to theirs, and they didn't realize that, you know, as maybe somebody from Bulgaria or Ukraine, now hearing a story from somebody who is from England or Italy or Spain and has a very similar type of challenges, lack of encouragement and peer groups and things like that. And so they hear these stories, and again, over time, they connect outside of this event, they connect through the network, and they've built these long relationships over the last 10 years. So for example, when we, I guess it's been going on now for two or three years, when the full-scale invasion by Russia into Ukraine took place, there were already many Ukrainians who have been part of the network that have built those relationships over time. And so when this happened, very quickly, our network was able to jump in and come alongside these families, some of the young couples, and through those relationships, through the network taking place, we were able to support and walk alongside those families and the church in Ukraine as well. And even as many of them had to leave Ukraine, we've been able to maintain those relationships. But because of those relationships, we're still, even today, able to support some of the work and the needs that are happening in Ukraine and need to continue to happen as well. So thanks to that network, it's been one of the unfortunate circumstances, but we've been able to see great things happening. Mm-hmm.
So Nate, tell us a little about why you're raising money for this project. What does the project support?
Yeah, so with this project especially, again, giving some context, most of the pastors, most of the leaders in our European context are working as a volunteer. Many of them are not paid as a pastor or as a minister in the church. They have other jobs or full-time jobs. They're leading the church, they're leading their ministry in the margins. And so to take time out of their jobs and their regular work life and family life to come to an event like this. It's not an easy thing to do. And so many of them have to request time off. Some have to get travel visas coming from the Middle East, North African countries. And by and large, most of them or their churches cannot send a lot of the leaders to an event like this. And so most of the funds that we raise go to help with scholarships to make sure that these leaders can connect, be encouraged, receive training for their ministry context. And by and large, for most of them, this is the only type of leadership conference or event that they can attend throughout the course of their ministry and their work.
That's awesome. And some of you guys that are in here have actually been to 3WLN, which is awesome, and had to get a chance to experience that. So we have projects that span an entire region, like the one you just described. You know, a global strategy, we actually talk about kind of three things that we think healthy churches participate in, and we want to help see the church around the world do, and that's to become locally led and sustained. So that idea that we want to have local funding, local leadership. We think local leaders are the best at supporting the church on the ground. So locally led and sustained, regionally connected. This is a great example of a regional connection and the value of that. And the third is that we want churches that are missionally engaged. We think that churches should always be going outside the walls to engage their community. 3WLN is a great regional connectivity project. One of the projects that I think exemplifies in my mind that call to be engaged in mission, engaged in the community where they are planted, is At Home. At Home Paris. For those who don't know anything about that work of At Home, can you just give us a quick history background of that project?
Yeah. So At Home was started by Pastor Samir Salibi and his wife Joanna. It began about 7 to 8 years ago when Paris, they're located out of Paris, France, and Paris began receiving about 1,000 refugees a day. Samir and his wife were originally from Lebanon, and at a young age, Samir was himself a refugee when his family left Lebanon, relocated to Paris. And so as Samir began to see in the news and just visibly see the amount of refugees coming into Paris, his heart really became broke for the needs of the refugees as they left their homes, and many of them spent months traveling from their home to Paris, and now they find themselves in this city, you know, different culture, context, language, all of the above. And so God really began working in his heart of who's going to look after these refugees, who's going to reach these immigrants coming into our city, and who's going to take care of them. And not immediately, but over the course of time, God really began to answer Samir's prayer, and Samir found out it was him that was going to begin doing some work that ultimately became At Home.
And At Home is involved in all kinds of ministry engagement in their community. We know that needs change, so the work that At Home does changes as well. But what are some of the ways that they currently serve, or even ways they've served in the past?
Yeah. So again, after 7 or 8 years in this ministry and in a location like Paris, things do change over time. COVID changed a lot. And so now they work in primarily three different areas. The first one is to meet people where they are. And that is going to parks and other locations where many refugees are either homeless or the government has placed them in different apartments and things like that. And so they spend time every week going and reaching people. Primarily, there's one park that they go to. They set up tables for tea and coffee and snacks. They hear stories. They get to know people and build relationships. And over time, invite them into their community as those who are for those who are receptive to it. They do weekly Bible studies, and this happens very slowly over time. Samir will go through the book of John and take 6 to 9 months going through that book. And most of the time, this is with Arabic or Farsi speakers. And so translation takes place and things like that. He will take I would say, long and deep relationships with those who are seeking to be baptized, wanting to make sure they understand the core tenets of the faith and that This isn't just something that they're wanting to do because now they're coming into Europe and this is just, you know, to receive benefits, but that this is a true life-changing decision that they're making that, that begins with the heart and the mind. And so Samir will walk with somebody for up to a year before he baptizes them. And so discipleship is very slow, very deliberate, and it takes a long time. And then the third thing that they do is Sunday gatherings, their worship gatherings. And this also looks very different as well.
Which is what I want to ask about next, yeah, you know. Yeah. So I've been able to experience a church service there, and it's a very unique experience. Well, unique just because of the people that are there. So can you tell us what a service at home community, what that looks like?
Yeah, it's very, you have a lot of nationalities, you have a lot of languages. And that it's very intentional and deliberate. So Samir will tell you the Sunday gathering is not the most important thing that they do. That happens during the week. And Sunday's a time for the body to come together to receive encouragement, to share what God is doing in their life, and to prepare you for this next week coming up as you go out. And so he wants to make sure that everyone hears the gospel or scripture in their own language, that you're going to hear a worship song in your own language. And so from French to Arabic to Farsi, English, if there are English speakers there, they have worship and songs for that. And then if you're going to give a sermon or a message there, your message is going to be translated probably two or three different times in different languages. And so most of the services take about an hour and a half to 2 hours or so. But and there's far more effective and efficient ways of doing this. But that's not what it's about. It's about everybody coming together on Sunday and hearing scripture in their language, worshiping in their language, and understanding that you're a part of something bigger than just your culture, your context, your language, that God's kingdom is bigger than any one of our little bubbles that we live in. And so it's always a great, encouraging time.
Yeah, I love you said that, because at home, though it was birthed and serves in Paris, it has connections all over the region, but even all over the world. Mm-hmm. It's been neat for me to learn about the connection between Matt Ingalls at Oak Park Church of God in Salem and between Samir there in Paris at home. And I remember learning more about their connection through an episode of this podcast that I was listening to one night as I was doing dishes in my kitchen in Cote d'Ivoire. But that was a neat connection because the Oak Park Church I attended for a short time as a kid growing up in Oregon. And then Samir and Joanna, our family, had the opportunity to meet them when we were doing language study in France before we moved to Cote d'Ivoire. So it's really neat to see those connections. And I know that At Home is really connected. What can you share about At Home's connections specifically within the region?
Yeah, because many of the people that they're working with are coming from different countries, different parts of the region in terms of Middle East, North Africa. Many of those people who have left their homes in those areas often will find themselves in Europe and in other countries, Italy, Sweden, Finland, Germany, and then from there make their way to Paris. And so many of those that they're working with in the community of At Home, once they have experienced life change, they want to then share that with friends and family members in a safe way. And so for example, they will have during their worship service, they also are on Zoom. And so they'll have probably 5 to 10 participants mm-hmm. who are attending church on Sunday, but are located in different countries around Europe and some from the Middle East. It's also opened up doors for Samir to do some online Bible studies in other countries that I can't share, but are very closed countries to Christianity. And many, many leaders have benefited from their relationship with Samir and what he has been able to do in terms of forming Bible studies and discipleship programs and those resources through online Zoom calls and everything. And so it's been great to see how the gospel has been able to permeate and to penetrate into some of those very closed countries through the at-home community. Samir's also working on another project called The Hub. And through The Hub, they want to offer support services to others, other missionaries or those who have a local ministry who may not, they have the passion and they want to go and reach people, maybe a specific target group of people, but they don't have the network or the support system around them. And so Samir knows that through at home, had he not had the support system that he had around him, it would have never come into existence. And so through The Hub, he wants to be able to provide a network and a support system for others as well, either in France or throughout Europe.
All this while he has another job. I mean, doing this.
He has a full-time job. Yes.
It's just incredible to think about that.
Yep.
You know, for those that want to learn more about At Home, there is a new book out co-authored by Matt Ingalls and Samir Salibi. I would highly recommend it, especially if you've ever said something like, you know, I feel like as a U.S. church, we could learn a lot from the global church and hearing how they engage, how they think about ministry, how they talk about the work that they do, how they disciple. This is a fantastic primer on that, walking through, you know, part of what Samir was thinking as they were developing what they're doing. Really, really fantastic. We've also done podcasts with Samir that you can listen to. Samir was on in the past season 3, episode 2. Matt Ingalls, who co-authored this, season 10, episode 7. And then we featured a story of a refugee family in Paris that you did, Nate, season 4, episode 9. So those are also places where you can hear more of these stories about the ways that At Home is working. Nate, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
Next, we're going to be joined by Abby Torgeson. Abby, so grateful you can join a World of Good podcast. Last time you were on, I believe you were translating for Esteban Zapata. Today, we would like you to only speak in English. You don't have to speak in Spanish, at least that would be helpful for most of us. But Abby, before we get started, where are you located and kind of what's your role?
Yeah, so my husband Jason and I serve as the regional connectors for the Church of God in Latin America, and we live in San Jose, Costa Rica.
Wonderful. We're going to talk about two projects in Latin America, Cuba and a project in northern Brazil. We're going to start with Cuba. What can you tell us about the history of the Church of God in Cuba and what has kind of brought them back into the spotlight? I mean, I feel like in some ways I haven't heard a lot about Cuba and then in the last couple of years I've heard a lot more. So what's been that reemergence?
Yeah, so the Church of God in Cuba has been around since about the 1930s. So it's a very old church, a very established church, and has typically had a lot of connection with other churches in the Caribbean. The Dominican Republic is really connected. But for some reason, and to be honest, we're still kind of trying to understand what happened. But for about the last 20 years or so, there just was a big disconnect. There wasn't a lot of visitors. I know there was a bit of a split within the church in Cuba, but it wasn't, you know, a particular scandal or thing that happened, but they just kind of fell off the radar. And so about a little over a year ago, they got a new national leader, Pastor Laura, and she really took it upon herself to start connecting, to start reaching out. And so about a little over a year ago, she reached out to one of our international leadership team representatives, Monica Fischer, who lives in Argentina, and invited her and another pastor's wife from the Dominican to come do a ladies' conference. And I reached out to Pastor Laura just for kind of a basic question, and she invited me. And so the three of us had a chance to go. I don't even know if I can get a visa that quick because it's a process. And she was able to get a visa for me. And so I was able to go a year ago. And that was the first visit, she said, that they'd had from either Latin America or the U.S. in I think 20 years. And so it was such a blessing and such an encouragement to be there. And from that point, then they invited the president of the Latin American leadership team. They invited Andrew. Then my husband Jason was able to go a couple months ago. And so there's been just a lot more connections since then. But I would really attribute a lot of that to Pastor Laura, who's been very intentional about reaching out and building those connections.
Abby, when you visited the church in Cuba, what was that experience like? Tell us more about the service there and what the experience was like visiting.
Yeah, I always say that Cuba is another world. Actually, when I finished my trip there, I called Jason from the plane on the way back, and I said, okay, I feel like I've just gone on my first missions trip, which it is not. So when the kids go to bed, I need to sit down and process and show you photos and all these things that we don't normally do when we get back from a trip. But Cuba itself, just talking about the country, is another reality. And just for a lot of complex reasons that it's not time to get into right now, but The economic crisis there is staggering. Fuel shortages. You drive through the capital city at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There's no traffic. There's no cars on the road because there's no fuel. Shortages of supplies and materials. Just getting by every day, finding your bread to eat, even if you have the money to buy it, is a struggle. A place where doctors can make $25 a month practicing medicine. It is another world in terms of that experience. But as a total contrast, the church is amazing. The church is strong. We have about 70 congregations in Cuba. It's vibrant. The people are very welcoming. The people of Cuba are actually very welcoming. One thing they told us is that Cubans in general, not just the church, are kind of trained or taught to be generous and to be hospitable to foreigners. And so even the crime that you see, which really isn't that much, but the crime that you see is Cuban on Cuban, and foreigners are generally left alone. Foreigners are given priority and preference. And so it was very welcoming and also very humbling for us. Monica had gotten to Cuba a day before me. And so she sent me messages. I was asking more about the visa process and things that I anticipated to be a problem. And she said, please bring a pillow. The pastor doesn't have enough. I said, that's fine. Please bring toilet paper. Please bring paper towels and napkins. So I was in the airplane bathroom, you know, pulling out the little wrinkled paper towels that no one wants, but we use every single one of them. But, you know, that was humbling at the same time to have the pastors and the church members share with us what there was, and to share the coffee and to share things that we had brought as gifts being given back to us as hospitality. The church is amazing. The music was very high quality, all things considered, especially with older instruments and equipment. But it's the only place where I've been, at least in Latin America, where the singing of the actual voices overpowered the speakers, which normally is definitely the other way around. But just a church that's vibrant and alive and full of faith. I wasn't there for this, but it made the news a few months ago when the whole island was out of power for three to four days. And that's not just power. That becomes your water pumps. That becomes your cell service. That becomes your landline service. And when it finally was over, I reached out to Pastor Laura. I said, how did it go for you guys? She goes, well, you know, we didn't have a way to communicate whether we were having service or not. So we expected people were going to be there, and we had church. And it's hot. So imagine a closed off room that normally does have AC, no AC running, can't open the windows because it's, you know, a building built for AC. And they sat in the dark and had service. And they said, we realized our freezers and everything were running out of, the food was going to go bad. So we took out what we had, we used the gas we had, and we served the community, the food that was in our freezers. So that's the heart and the spirit of Cuba, which just about wrecked me.
I think some people may be surprised. I know I was when I landed to find out that we have 70 congregations that span across the country in different locations, which is a country that we usually think about as having a really difficult relationship with religious groups. So how is the Cuban Church of God doing in that context, in the context where we think about it as a really complicated religious environment? Mm-hmm. How are they thriving and surviving?
Yeah, so the Church of God, because it's been around since the 1930s, that's pre-revolution, 1959. And so the way it works is any religious group that existed prior to the revolution is grandfathered in. And so I think the Church of God enjoys some more rights and privileges than maybe some other religious groups would like because of that. And so some of the main church buildings, I think there were 12 that were built before 1959. They're able to function completely openly. This is, you know, Pastor Laura, this is our church. We're, you know, you can be open on those things. And they've worked really hard to be respectful of the rules and regulations. So when I went in, they said, if you even stand up and say one word in the church, you've got to have a religious visa. Don't try to sneak in on a tourist visa and then, you know, try to speak in the church. That can be bad for you and for the church. And there was no reason to. They were able to process the visa. We got the visa and were able to do what we needed to freely. We do have some house churches that have gone through the permitting process. They have something called a casa culto, where a pastor can build their private home and then also use it for church service. If you look at it, it's a house with a giant living room that has a row of chairs, right? Or has rows of chairs. And so they've worked really hard to be respectful of the regulations, and so they've been able to function really well.
Global Strategy has a project called the House of Leading and Learning to assist the Church of God in Cuba. Can you tell us what that project entails?
Yeah, so this is the newest project in our region of Latin America. When I went last year, they said, we want to have a sit-down meeting about projects, and Abby, we want you to come. And I and oh boy, always get a little nervous with what that's going to be. And just with what I had learned from the context, I kind of assumed it would have a more humanitarian bent, or more, you know, we need to have a feeding program or this or that. But the reality is the church is already doing a lot of those things and they have resources. And they said, actually, we have a seminary that we require all of our pastors before they become, ordained or serve in ministry to go through the seminary program. And it's actually done online, which if you've been to Cuba, the internet is not what it is here. And so they'll still maintain the online component, but they said, we want a place where our students can come together. We want a national office for the church. We want a place where we can have, you know, events for the national church and don't have to rent another space. And so they said right now property in Havana is a pretty accessible price. And so they want to actually purchase a house property in Havana to serve kind of these multiple functions. So house of leading and learning, so to train leaders and also for learning more ministry development. And so what's really cool about this project, and that where I think it ties into some of the values that we've talked about, obviously resources in Cuba itself are very low. That one of the first questions that we asked was, okay, if we can help you get a house, can you guys maintain it? Can you pay the utilities? Can you keep it up? Can you do all those things? And they said, yes, we do have the resources for that. It's just that initial, you know, one-time investment is just something we're not able to save for. But the Church of God in Latin America also has really rallied around Cuba and this excitement and everything that's going on there. And so the International Leadership Team, which is called the SEED, that's a long acronym in Spanish, the SEED has actually committed to finding 50% of the funds for purchasing this house and has asked Global Strategy then to come up with the other 50%. I think honestly right now, and we've just started raising funds, but I think the Latin Church might be beating us at the moment.
Wow, that's awesome.
With what they've been able to raise. And so that's a project then where we're working with Latin America to be able to get this property that we hope will be beneficial for the church in Cuba.
I love that partnership. I think that is so much what the church is supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. And when we can do things together, it means that we get to celebrate together what God's doing in those places.
Absolutely.
I had a great experience being there as well. And we have a podcast with Pastor Lauda that will come out in the fall. So for those that want to hear more from her, excited about that. Another incredible project that was recently completed is the Church Plant Initiative that was done in northern Brazil. And I think it's a great example of a church truly having a passion. Like, they knew what they were called to do. They were passionate about church planting. But coming to our organization and saying, hey, can you help support us in making this happen? And us being able to just say, yeah, let's figure out how to do that. Can you tell us about the church in northern Brazil, kind of paint a picture of what that looks like?
Yeah, so the Church of God in Brazil is also one of our fastest growing, most alive churches in Latin America, and the northern region particularly. So it actually, maybe 30, 40 years ago, was actually the mission field for the church in southern Brazil. The church in southern Brazil has been around for now over 100 years. And so a few decades back, they started sending what for them were missionaries. Brazil is huge. If you ever lay it on a map, I mean, like spanning the distance from Los Angeles to the East Coast. But the north is definitely kind of the wild, wild west. It's the Amazon region, and still to a degree of that. And so the north, even for probably still for some southern Brazilians, is kind of the mission field. But it's the part that's really just grown up and exploded for church planting and just for growth and vitality, and it's an exciting place to be. Yeah.
Can you tell us about the church planting project? What was the goal and what are some of the challenges they faced?
Yeah, so I wanted to highlight this project partly because as we talk about projects, you know, there's different kinds of projects. There's, you know, as Nate was talking about the Three Worlds Leadership Network, or we have some in Latin America that by nature are going to be ongoing, right? You're going to have these conventions and these conferences every couple years, and there's different people that come in and out. But we also want to talk about projects that have a kind of a start and an end date, and maybe not the work itself does not end, but our partnership has that natural off ramp, and we get to celebrate, you know, ways that we are able to walk alongside. But then also being able to step back and let the church continue to do it on their own. And so this is a great example. So back in about 2018, there were already planting churches left and right in northern Brazil. Just as another example that I didn't share earlier, in the city of Itaituba, they have an event called Desperta every year, which is kind of a gathering, evangelistic gathering, that's supposed to be kind of an alternative to Carnaval, which is a very famous holiday, but also a very very secular holiday in the way it's lived out. And so this was kind of a Christian alternative to Carnival. It's kind of a normal year for them to say, oh yeah, we had 300 youth saved this year. I think this year was like 290, and I was like, oh, they're down this year. I mean, but, right? And so it may not be 290. Jonathan Todd, our missionary there, would know the exact number, but I remember that. And so they've already been planting churches, but back in 2018, they had this initiative. They said, in the northern region of Brazil, which Brazil is distinctly divided into regions, we have five states where we don't yet have a Church of God presence. We want to, in 5 years, plant one church in each of those states. So five churches in 5 years in these states of northern Brazil in time for the 100-year anniversary celebration of the Church of God in Brazil in 2023. So that was their goal, and they were actually already starting that by the time they reached out to us to see about having that as a project. And so what they anticipated that was going to be challenging, if you've been in Brazil, you know, a lot of the highways are not necessarily paved. And so when you talk about something being 1,000 kilometers or, you know, 600-700 miles, 800 miles, 900 miles from the next congregation on unpaved roads, these are not short distances. The regional pastors had a regional convention, not the national convention, the regional convention of Brazil, and we're on a bus for 54 hours to get to their regional convention. So these are people who are very committed. I was complaining about our five-hour flight experience to get to Denver. And so they anticipated that, you know, these distances are going to be huge. It's going to be challenging. And the goal, the way they wanted to go about it was, as students were graduating from the seminary, they wanted to send out new seminary graduates, but not just, you know, one poor soul that just graduated and fling them out there by themselves. But they sent a team of graduates along with some experienced church planters to go out to these new areas to plant churches and then kind of figure out who's the best fit and who's going to stay there and lead the church long term. So it's a way of giving seminary students, recent graduates, some experience, and also a way then of church planting. So they anticipated that challenge. They also recognized that the church in northern Brazil was going to host the Latin American Convention in what was supposed to be 2021 and became 2022, which was a huge logistical challenge for them. And then, of course, as this initiative goes, they start in 2018, start getting the ball rolling, 2018, 2019. We all know what happened in 2020. And yet, with all of that, including also some health problems that one of the family members of some of the key leaders had, some significant health problems that they would not have anticipated, they opened the last one, the last state had its work opened in November of 2023. They made it, which was just a phenomenal success. So
that's incredible. We're so grateful that we get to be a partner in that. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, not be the driver, but to be a part of that work that's happening and celebrate with them. Yeah. One of my favorite statistics, my favorite statistics about Brazil. I had no idea how huge it was, but from the northernmost part of Brazil to the southernmost part of Canada is actually shorter than from the northernmost part of Brazil to the southernmost part of Brazil. Brazil, even from top to bottom, is just huge. It is expansive. And so I think the fact that they were able to complete that is just, miraculous. It's a wonderful gift. So,
and I will say, I don't have, numbers in terms of what the Brazilian church spent. You know,
sure,
they didn't track that in the same way that maybe we would through the project. But yeah, we certainly had a lot of generous partners in that project, and we so appreciate that. We appreciate Jonathan and Beth Todd, our missionaries there, and their leadership in that, and their connections, particularly with their networks and others who walked alongside that project. But if I had to just throw out a number, I would say we probably still only funded 5-10% of that project.
Wow.
The Brazilian church definitely took the primary leadership on that. And so it was a joy to be a part of it and to be a blessing and to bless that work. But also, again, kind of with that humility of recognizing, like, God is going to do this, and
yep,
he's going to do it through his people. And we just get the privilege of being a small part of it.
So grateful to be part of a global family.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for Abby for sharing with us. Really appreciate that. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us for an hour almost now. You have patiently waited. Thanks for joining this episode of A World of Good. Thank you, Jenny. Wonderful job joining us, Nate and Abby. I hope you've been encouraged by these stories of the good that God is doing around the world. And even in challenging moments that we're facing, even in times when things may look difficult, there is hope as sisters and brothers around the world support and encourage one another. If you don't walk away hearing anything, God does incredible things when we support and encourage one another. So would you commit to praying for the global church? I really hope you can do that. And until next time, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/aworldofgood. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.